Weatherly Report
with Chris
and Kyle,
a podcast about making music
and life.
Regular dynamics.
Yeah, I never live mixed anybody on a vocal condenser. I never had that experience. Just nobody ever brought one, and I wasn't giving them one. You know,
yeah.
Here's an SM57 or a 58. Have a good day.
Right. Don't swallow it. Don't cup it. And if you drop it, I'm gonna put my foot up your ass.
Pretty much.
That was pretty much my mantra.
Actually, if it's 57, drop it all you want. The 58s are the ones I don't want you denting the grills on. The 57s you can throw around the room for all I care. You're not gonna hurt them.
This is the first 58 that I've owned. That I didn't even really own, but the pile, like, it's the first 58 that I've ever had in my available arsenal that doesn't have a damaged
grill.
Cone.
Yeah,
it's fucking terrible, man.
It's one thing I like about the blues is these seem to be pretty robust. They don't dent very easily, anyway.
Oh, dude, I've dropped these so many times.
Yeah, well, they have this nice big ring on them that keeps
I freaking
you from
love it.
Them up.
Yeah, I love it. I've dropped them so many times; it's not even funny. Like, they fall out of my back pocket at the Hope Center all the time, and at the farm, at the barn at Hebron Homestead. I've dropped them like maybe 3 or 4 times.
Yeah,
I'm durable as hell.
I'm a big fan of the blues. I just got the Blue Ember, the little
The
side address small diaphragm condenser they put out. It's only $100 and the thing sounds like money. It's amazing. Acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I definitely want to use that as like my right stereo on miking acoustic on the next stuff.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. Well, dude, we haven't done a podcast in a bit.
We haven't. other than there's a new episode of Tales and Tunes.
Correct.
I did Carry On, so please go back and listen to that and like and subscribe and all that jazz. Yes.
And by the way, very good work on that. It's definitely a step up in the production game for the Tales and Tunes. Now I have to get my act together.
Yeah. I mean, but this one we also had more time to work on it. Like the other ones, we needed to get some content out for the podcast and
it was
out
a new
what
concept.
We were doing with them.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a new concept for the first couple, but...
Yeah. I can tell you that one of the big things that I did on my approach for this one, mainly for the backing tracks, was... So, we are in Studio B. Everybody is in my nice little home studio, and one person is always a permanent fixture in my home studio. But, so, Taylor's with us, and... Yeah. We've been doing a lot of just like semi ad lib jamming.
Well, it's all ad lib on my end.
Well, yeah.
But yeah.
It starts as ad lib on my end to where I just try and, you know, focus where the stops should be, focus where the buildups and the developments should be. And I really took that approach to writing for the Tales and Tunes as opposed to sitting down and mapping out my text and my monologue and then writing to the actual monologue. I didn't even really worry about my speech patterns when I was writing to it. I worried more about the fluctuation and the dynamic contrast of how I was saying it instead of what I was saying.
Yeah, I found the same thing. When doing the monologue-y pieces, it's more about tension and release in what you're doing and what you're saying. Like, you have to find the tension points and what you're talking about and then give them breath for a second.
Right.
That's the biggest thing when doing those monologues is what I found anyway.
Yeah. Help build that contrast.
But no, I think you did an amazing job with this one.
I appreciate it.
But yeah.
It was fun.
Definitely nice to be over here in Studio B, be out of my four walls, which I actually can't be in my four studio walls right now anyway.
Yeah.
Because my studio, for those who don't know, has been... wet.
Not in a good way.
Not in a good way. We had a little bit of a flooding issue, so my space is currently under construction. They actually started today on the rebuild out. Everything's been dried out, so no equipment was damaged in the process because I'm very meticulous about keeping all my crap off the floor. So thank goodness for that.
Thank you for being an IT nerd.
Yes.
Don't put shit on the floor, people.
Yep.
Ever.
But they were doing drywall in there today, so I had to get everything that can suck up drywall dust out of there and off. So basically the entire studio is completely broken down and moved into a couple spare rooms.
But like we were talking about a couple weeks ago when this first happened, and you were talking about having to break everything down. When things happen like that, you know, find the good in them. One, we have more than enough time now to go through and actually do a deep clean on all our gear. Like,
yep.
I remember when the last time we actually cleaned out ports and air dusted freaking pots and shit like that. You know, there's a lot of maintenance that you should be doing on a regular basis that it takes a catastrophe for you to actually do.
Yeah, because you just don't want to slow down and unhook anything. You're Absolutely. Just like, no, everything's working. Don't touch it. Yeah, no, I get it. And that is kind of where I'm going with it. I'm taking the positives of, yeah, I'm going to break everything down and clean it up. And I started a lot of that as I was breaking it down. But the other is just to fix a couple minor acoustical issues that were annoying me in the space. We have that giant cabinet that's shaped like a TARDIS. That's shaped like a TARDIS that we use for mic stands. I'm getting rid of that. It was more or less in the way and acoustically not in a great spot. And there wasn't another good place for it. So that's going. Just taking the opportunity to do some slight reconfigurations, make things a little more ergonomic, run some cables in better manners while everything's out of the way. So I'm going to take the positives of I'm going to get things straightened up a little bit better than they were. But more than anything, I'm kind of glad it happened over the holidays. Gave me some distractions of not being able to go do my, this is what I do to relieve tension, is go to my studio and work. I need it back now.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get back to work on stuff. So yeah, I mean, I haven't touched anything as far as mixing in over 2 weeks.
I know there's two mixes floating around of mine that I'm pretty much really getting sick of listening to.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, they're not bad mixes.
They're not, but I mean, there's just, stopped working on mixing and mastering and focus more on production and arranging and the composing side of things and the business.
Yep.
Because I mean, your capabilities far exceed mine. So there's no point of both of us like allocating all of our resources to being VST nerds. No offense.
Fair enough.
And honestly, Kyle's like, I got this new plugin, and I'm like, dude, that makes like $485 for the month. You know how to use it? Yeah, absolutely, dude. I'll use it in this case, in this case, in this case. I'm like, all right, well, cool. Then I'm not doing anything.
And I generally do end up using that.
I'm going to go back to writing string parts.
Yep. But
right.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm very ready to have the studio back, but enough of that.
Yeah.
That's my woe is me story for the moment.
I mean, it has been a good thing. Like you said, over the holidays, we have a couple projects in the studio from clients, but nothing too time pressing.
No, there's nothing time pressing. Obviously the Old Man Jones stuff that we've been working on with John, that's a constantly revolving door of just pushing.
I've gotten some amazing feedback on the last two releases from him.
Yeah.
It's great. I really enjoy it.
I've gotten what I really wanted to get personally out of those, which I try to not attach my personal ambitions to anybody's projects.
Absolutely.
Any client's projects. But the one thing I really wanted to get out of working on those records was to refine my approach to electric guitars in mixing. Because within the context of Weatherly, I have no problem with it because of the way that we layer things and the way that we move things out of the way. But when you talk about
spent an entire year defining my sound to where when I send you my four guitar parts to year two, like, I mean, you just throw a compressor and my guitar is already built out for our mix.
Well, and our songs don't really, we don't do a lot of stacking of the same part for thickness.
Yeah.
That's something we rarely do in Weatherly context, but in the context of the Old Man Jones stuff and the way that those records are, that's what it needed.
Yeah.
It needed that stacked,
big ass guitars.
I mean, the guitars are as big as a Foo Fighters record, you know, I mean, they're that thick and large. And that just was not something that I was necessarily worried I wasn't going to be able to achieve, but it was something I wanted to achieve really, really well to the point I was satisfied with it. And I feel like I accomplished that on those records. So that was my own personal victory out of that. But more than anything, he was happy with it. And that was what I was most concerned with.
How much is going through Two Notes? The majority of it?
A good portion of it is going through Two Notes.
I think you did some stuff on the Panama too, right?
Yeah. So we did. So it depends on which song you're talking about, but basically it's a mixture of tube amps through the Two Notes, which every time I have a cab saved in there, it basically says John's cab on it because it's a 212 Creamback IR. that I'm using because that's what he
uses. That's what he uses live.
That's what he uses live.
Yeah.
And it and you know it's right when you pull it up and he's like, that's the sound I'm looking for. It's like, okay, well, it's a Greenback. Like, that makes sense. That makes sense. So a lot of it is that. There's also a couple things. I was using some Plugin Alliance amp emulation things. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly what they're called, but they're what come in the Plugin Alliance bundle. One of them's a diesel, and it has its own IRs loaded in it. So I just use those internal IRs, which they're basically V3412 cabs in various mic combinations. And then the other is just a Plexi type emulation that I'm using for them. So it's really a stack of those three on almost every song. It's a channel or two of the diesel. If I'm using two channels of the diesel, I won't use the Plexi. If I'm using only one channel of diesel, then we use the Plexi.
Gotcha.
And then a tube amp on top of that. So it's usually a stack of all three of those.
Yeah, that's a big ass stack.
It's a thick stack.
It's a wall of sound. I love it too. It's great. Like, it's also very representative of like some early Godsmack stuff. When you just get that wall of sound, but you still maintain that clarity and the definition between the guitar parts. And
yep. Well, I mean, and it's a very traditional rock sound because depending on which guitar he brought for which record, for which song rather, it's either Burst Buckers or 57 Classics in his guitar. So it's a very traditional Gibson two humbucker through a very loud gaining amp.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you can capture that well, which is the trick, making it sound great is not hard. Getting it captured and it sounding great can be difficult because you can lose a lot of the bottom end when you're miking things, which is part of why I like using the two notes.
Yeah.
Because I can very quickly, without having to get out of my seat, adjust the mics because I'm virtually adjusting them to do whatever I need to do. It just makes everything much faster to get to a point where I'm like, okay, we're good. Let's go. Here's a click and roll. Rather than let's set up your amp, let's dial that in. Now let's get a mic in there. Now let's fiddle with
now
the mic.
Now let's move your amp over here and put a different mic on it.
I'm like, if I can do all that virtually within a room and get a result that everybody's happy with, including myself, then I'm going to go that route, which is the whole point of the way I built out my studio is to be able to do that. So now I've proven it out and I'm very happy about that.
Absolutely. I mean, that was honestly, I don't remember the last time I actually mic'd my cab. Probably Carry On.
Yeah. Actually, yes. That's exactly what it is.
Sea of Lunacy and... No, Sea of Lunacy, there is one mic'd guitar track on there. My other tracks, surprisingly enough, are DI, straight from Mike Tana. I sat there and when I got the new interface, I just threw a monitor mix of what was coming out of the mic and my DI track, threw the mic all the way in the left speaker, threw my DI track all the way in the right speaker, and just started playing around until they fucking sounded exactly the same. And I'm done. Yeah. But the only time I want, if I need to get like a little extra feedback or some different rasp or something like that I'm looking for, something a little more dynamic and a little more sloppy or sloshy, then I'll throw a mic on the guitar cab. But other than that, like everything that I've been doing, you're listening wine, all DI tracks. And those are that guitar part in the chorus, probably one of the best sounding guitar parts that I have in all of Weatherly stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I'm miking on is clean electric still. And that's just because...
If not, it's dead.
Well, it's not even that it's dead. I've gotten clean electric sounds that I'm happy with going with the virtual route and going with IRs and whatnot. I just can't beat what I can do with a Bogner in my 212 cab.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and that Bogner, it's not a traditional Bogner. It's a 40-watt 6L6 setup. It's basically a loud Fender type amp more than anything else. That part of it, anyway, the clean side of it.
Yeah.
So... I just have not been able to beat that, plus the reverb in it. On clean guitar, I just can't beat
it. The clarity on that head is fucking insane.
It's stupid. Yeah, it's really dumb, especially on the clean sounds. Yeah. I'll be the first to say, I don't like the gain channel on it, and I don't use it. I use the clean channel and stack pedals into it, because the gain channel on it is useless as far as I'm concerned.
I feel like we used it on something.
What's wrong with it? What's the...
I don't even know how to explain it other than the fact it's that unusable. It either has not enough bottom end or too much bottom end, because there is a base cut switch on it that I can do, but it either goes from being super woofy or feels like it drops off a cliff and it's all mid-range.
Yeah.
So it either goes from very, very dense, super heavy chuggy to plexi that has a 57 that somebody kicked off axis on accident. Like, that's what it sounds like to me. And I just don't like the gain.
It's very broken too. Like when you push a lot of gain through it, it tends to distort the actual pitch and tone that you're playing. If you dig into it a little bit too hard,
sounds
kind of
cool.
I
have four pedals to be able to do that, but it needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
Like on the Bogner, it's just not very consistent. Like it was the same way as how it was when I was trying to push heavy drives through the Black Star.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. And like I said, I wish I could explain why it is more, but that's also why I bought the Panama head, is because I love the gain channel on the Panama head. So if I need a gain channel on an amp and I just want amp tone, I just use the Panama for that.
Yeah.
Which panel?
It's a little, I think it's called their 5-watt is the name of it.
The 5-watt one. Yeah, okay, I know which one it is.
Yeah.
I thought about buying one for a while.
I've got one if you want to check it out first. It's at the studio, so you're more than welcome. It's back together anyway.
Yeah.
But that one's a fun one. And funny enough, on the Panama, I hate the clean channel. Clean channel on it's garbage. Gain channel on it's great. So, you know, I between the two, I'm good. But that's the only time I mic guitars.
Man.
And even if I'm using the gain channel on the Panama, I put it through the two notes. I don't bother micing it.
Right.
So...
And I mean, for Weatherly stuff, you're head rush all the way.
I'm head rush all the way for Weatherly stuff. That's the only thing I haven't tracked Old Man Jones stuff through is the head rush, oddly. And I'm loving the head rush. I actually need to update firmware on the head rush because they put out a new one recently.
There's a new one for the Helix too, isn't there?
Yeah, now I can use my computer with it.
Yeah?
Yeah, Windows 10 only.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that. Did, yeah. Because I looked up to see if we could just bring it over and you could roll back the drivers, but it's just outside of my operating system too now. Well, actually, you could probably do it on the iMac.
I don't want to roll back the drivers because they added like a bunch of poly effects with the sustain pedal. There's a poly sustain, a poly pitch, and they added the horizon.
That's fun.
Precision drive.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, I can't
roll
it back.
It's bad that I knew exactly what it was. All I said was Horizon. I knew what it was already. But
so I can't roll it back.
Yeah. Oh, that precision drive's amazing.
It is.
I almost bought one of those, the actual pedal.
You should.
It's in my list of drives that I want to own. I'm actually jealous because I looked at the I went really back and forth when I bought the head rush between Helix or head rush. And ultimately, the usability of the interface on the head rush is what beat it out for me. And the amp models. I'll be the first to say that the effects are better in the Helix than the head rush. I think the amp models in the head rush are better than the Helix to me, to my ear. But they just added the 5150 head in this new update. And I really want that because then I could track Old Man Jones stuff through the head rush. Because
I'll have a
5150M in there.
Absolutely.
I just couldn't find an amp heavy enough for what he wanted in the head rush. That was what was bothering me with it and why I didn't push him through it.
But that's one of my tones that I have built out that it's all over the Story Hour EP is that I did the best to just kind of use the brown setting on the Katana to kind of mimic a 5150 head as much as I could, just the drive channel. But two of my speakers in my 412 are 5150s.
Yeah.
So I can get close to that tone.
Gear question. On the Helix, can you host third-party IRs?
Yeah.
You can?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was another thing that I found with the head rush.
Should go in a little bit more depth with that, because I'm not sure I understand what you mean by third-party IRs.
Okay. So both the Helix and head rush come with native cabinet emulations on them, right? You pair this head with this cab.
Yeah.
It's a nice little pretty picture of a cabinet that makes it look like it, whatever.
Yeah.
Helix has the same things natively. They come in it. you also have the option to use one of your effects blocks on the head rush, and maybe you can tell me how it does it in the Helix, because I don't know. But you use one of your effects blocks, and it's labeled IR, and you can use that effects block to load any IR you've loaded onto the board that you've bought from a third party. So I can go buy IRs from Celestian or Victory or Orange or whoever. I can even pull the Two Notes ones down, which you're not supposed to do, but I can do it.
Make your own.
You can make your own. Yeah. But I don't use any of the native cabs. I'm using all third-party IRs. And it's not that native cabs are bad. It's just that I really, really like the Orange cabinet emulations, and almost every patch I have set up for Weatherly is an Orange cab that I've loaded into the Headrush unit.
Yeah.
So I'm using third-party IRs. The other cool thing that it does, which I did not know until I started doing this, and we played a show with me doing it this way, and I really like it now, is I'm running my acoustic through the head rush because you can get acoustic IRs and host them in the same type of effects block. And I can't remember the name of the company, but they had a package of Takamine acoustic IRs. I'm like, well, all I play is Tox. So if I want an acoustic IR, I'd like a Tox. So I just kind of looked through it and I was like, oh, that's actually my guitar's IR right there. I'll take that one and just plug that in. And then I have all my reverbs and everything that are available to me in the Headrush also for acoustic. And I was using some of the shimmer effects and things like that on acoustic, which is fun.
Yeah. Intro of Carry On, stuff like that when we play live.
So the only thing I haven't done with the Headrush yet is run bass through it, which you can. I can I can grab a bass cab emulation, throw it in there, and have that set up, and I can run bass through it if I want.
Does it have bass amps?
Does. That's one.
Only one. Okay.
An SVT.
Yeah, I was going to say an 812 SVT.
Which, when I'm tracking bass at the house, all I'm using is an SVT VST anyway.
Yeah.
It's just an Ampeg SVT VST with a 810 fridge
cab. Did you see that there was a meme that came out a couple days ago, and it was a dude at the bottom of the steps with an SVT with an 812 cab at the bottom of the steps, and it says if 2020 was a load-in.
Yeah.
You have to carry that
810 cab, by the way.
Whatever.
Sorry, I had to.
If it came into the Monkey, I fucking unplugged it.
Yeah.
All right. I don't care what size that shit was. If it was almost as tall as me, it got unplugged.
Yeah.
I'd point to the monitor and be like, here, there's your amp now.
Yep. No, there's very little sense in those. But the other thing I do for tracking bass, though, is I actually run in my bass directly into the line in of the Two Notes.
Yeah.
Because the Two Notes also has power amp emulation. So I can throw on I can turn on a power amp emulation, set it over to bass, choose my tube type, and then run that into a bass cab emulation within the Two Notes. So everything's native to the Two Notes. So some of the stuff I've tracked that way, all the Old Man Jones ones I've tracked through the SVT VST, just for consistency. I've run them all that way, but everything everything that I've done for our stuff, I've done through the Two Notes.
I don't know. I just send you DI tracks.
I know. but I also run those back through the Two Notes.
That's
sometimes.
Fine. That's past the point of where I care.
And honestly, at that point,
it always sounds great when I get them back. So I just stopped questioning a long time ago.
Well, the only reason I do that is because I've always felt the only thing you lose running a bass DI for recording is air.
Yeah.
It's the only thing you lose. Everything else is already there. You don't need anything else.
Yeah.
There's a nice little
air button.
I just need air.
So there's literally a button that you push and it just is air.
Yeah, there is on my interface. So I will run I'll run it through on one channel, run a loop back, run it back through the pre and put on the air. So I can do it that way.
That's one thing I miss with Reason. Is having all that stuff in one place. And like Reason's rewire capabilities was really nice. Where you could literally flip it around and you can sit there and just fuck around with your patch cables and like move the cable where you want it to, drop it here, go from there. Absolutely loved working with Reason.
It's not like where you have to go edit the actual code in Reaper to get your loot back, like we had to do. Yeah, that was annoying. Now that it's there, it'll never be changed, but
That is weird. There was a forum on Reaper TV for that a couple weeks ago. I saw it pop up. Somebody asked a question, and they were like, oh, here you go.
Yep. Yeah, we figured this out. It's a pain in the butt, and it's stupid to have to do it this way.
It really is.
It's the only thing that I've ever found on Reaper where I've been like, that's dumb.
Yeah, but it did work out in my favor, because writing with other musicians, they've given me like just links to YouTube.
Yeah.
And so now when I'm working on it, I can just loop back YouTube into Reaper.
Yep.
And while I'm tracking my part to the YouTube video, I'm tracking the freaking YouTube video as well.
Well, the other fun thing is when I did the Akon reviews, mm-hmm. I had two Reaper projects going.
Yeah.
One was recording what I was doing.
Right.
And the other one was looped back from the original project so that I was playing back what I was demoing.
Right.
So I was recording myself talking and everything that I was doing in the other project mm-hmm. on the first project.
Yeah.
But the second project was where all my audio was that I was playing with for the demo right. purposes. So, yeah.
And that's the one that you threw on your screen capture.
Yep. Yeah, that's the Akon Digital review that's up there. So, yeah, it's very useful. I mean, extraordinarily useful, but it is very
good segue.
Dumb the way you have to set
Akon
that
Digital,
up.
Akon Digital, fantastic.
Akon Digital is fantastic. I've got to go update a couple other plugins because they've put out new versions of a couple of things.
Yeah.
And I need to go pull those down.
Yeah. I still use multi-band dynamics for so much. It's so versatile.
I use it all the time, too.
Depends
on the application, but it is definitely, it's in my three go-to compressors. It's one of the three.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on what the source is that I'm dealing with.
Yeah, same with my reverb. The reverb solo is still, it's one knob, one slider. Like, it's the only thing I put on my voice.
I still have three different reverbs I use.
The ROM,
still have to tell you, like, thank you 1,000 times, because the ROM's amazing, and I'm glad you found that one.
They gave it out for free last Christmas. It was like 14 days that it was online for free.
Is that the one you threw on the piano and I was playing?
Yeah.
I do.
Dark Impact.
Yeah.
The mix a little bit, throw the size up. Oh, I've even gotten to the point where I'm adjusting the mod just a little bit and speeding up the depth, just a hair. And it just gives that nice, like, crystallized clarity on top of everything, but it's still just this huge freaking wash underneath.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing
it's perfectly designed.
Yeah. It's the thing I like about the ROM. Number one, that Dark Impact setting is great, but the reason I like it is because of the amount of control you have, because what I've been doing with reverbs lately, and I actually like this on even when I'm playing guitar, I'm trying to find ways to do it now. And that's, how do I cut all the high end out of just the reverb? Like, I want the high end of my guitar maintained, but I don't want the high end of my guitar coming through in the reverb. I just want the low end, because that's how you get the clarity stacked with the big underneath sound.
Yeah. With the good washes.
That's a Rabir Massad trick that I found that he was talking about on one of his channels, and I was like, that's actually really smart. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. Can you do that in the head rush?
I can.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. I can EQ the reverb itself.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing with all of my guitar settings now. Yeah. It's my favorite new trick to get clarity in heavily reverbed guitars, because that's always what you deal with, is you just lose clarity when you do that. But if you take all the high end out, it restores it, and it's just so much better. And it doesn't clutter up your mix. That's the other good thing, is when you have all that high end reverb that starts clashing and competing with all sorts of other things going on.
Yeah, you
mix.
Also lose a lot of your transient attacks.
Well, and you lose some of your stereo spacing in your field, because everything gets wide when that happens.
Yeah.
If you push all that down at the low end, I'm centering up the low end of my mixes anyway. I try to mono everything that's below 100, 120 most of the time, sometimes all the way up to 160. I'm monoing everything in that final mix. So if all that reverb comes center, now it's not out here.
Yeah.
It's right here in the center, and it's on the low end. So it just doesn't clutter up everything.
Yeah. When you're monoing everything, are you just doing mid-side?
Yeah, I'm doing it with the BX Desk from Plugin Alliance on my master bus.
Okay.
It's got that. They make it simple because there's a mono maker button at the bottom, and you just set it to the frequency you want, then how hard you want to push that and pull it all in.
Seems like everything below 200.
Yeah, I found 200's a little aggressive for it, but like the worst I go is 160, and I'm usually between 100 and 160, and it just depends on the song and context and how much is going on at the low end.
Yeah.
For like all the Old Man Jones stuff, it's 120 and below is monoed essentially, so it's all up the center. It's sort of faux mid-side-ish the way that I'm doing it, but it basically just pulls all the bass out of the wings, you know, and keeps it in the center.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be in the wings.
No, no, it doesn't.
That's where I go.
That just screws up guitars and everything else. So yeah, that's kind of the trick with that. But yeah, I love the Dark Impact. But the other one, I still use Waves R-Verb. I can't get away from it. There's certain settings.
In the I don't have it anymore since I transferred over.
Yeah, there's certain
computers.
Certain settings in the Waves R-Verb that I don't know if it's just that my ear is so used to them that I like them.
Yeah,
and therefore that's what I go to.
I'm thinking it's definitely that.
It very well could be.
That doesn't matter.
But there's only two. Like I, granted, I always adjust it somewhat, but it's always one of two like presets that I then go and adjust to suit the song or whatever. But I'm always in Studio A or Studio B as far as the room size, and then I'll play with the pre delays and whatnot and mess with it just to get it where I want in the mix, obviously. But yeah, I still use that and almost exclusively on vocals. That's the only place I really still use the Waves R-Verb. Everything else ends up being ROM or the one knob reverb.
Yeah. Yeah, that ROM is fantastic.
It's just such a, especially for instruments.
It sounds so good on electric piano. It sounds acoustic guitar. So good.
Love it on acoustic.
Yeah. It did really good on in the mix I did of one of the Story Hour vocals. I was really surprised how well it sounded on voice.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it certainly can.
So while we're on gear and talking about head rushes and helixes and all that jazz, so Taylor, top three features of the Helix. Top three features of the Helix. Like the things
like a feature that sets it apart from the other ones? Because they're all kind
of... Doesn't matter. Anything that appeals to you when you go, like, and you go and you're like, I'm going to build a new patch, or I'm going to just play the guitar and twiddle. What are the first three things that you do on there other than going to a patch that you've already created or...
Well, you know, I mean, I'm constantly making.
Yeah, absolutely. Literally.
So I'm trying.
Every time he shows up, he's like, listen to this patch, dude. And I'm like, dude, sounds beautiful. I have no idea what I would use it for, but it sounds awesome.
Oh, they're all like, every single one's like that.
I've got several like that, too.
I don't think there's anything specific. I think I just go by ear. I'm like, oh, let's try this thing I heard in some video, like the Rubia thing.
Yep.
That I saw. Well, yeah, I saw that.
Helix guy, yeah.
He's yeah, but I saw that reverb.
Oh yeah,
trick, and I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna try that." Because I'm a big fan of ambient guitar, and
Rebeer's amazing at it. That. So yeah.
So stuff like that. But I don't think there's any, nothing like standout-ish.
So I have a better question.
Sure.
At what point are you gonna go buy a Neural DSP?
Oh, like
the quad cortex.
My goal is like get good enough to where they just send me one. Hopefully, yeah.
There you go.
But no,
that's a good goal.
I actually watched my first in-depth review of that the other day, because like I knew what it was in context, but I was like, okay, what's special about it? Why is this different than the other things on the market? And when I found out the way that they have it set up so that you can literally set up so that your different effects are using different cores of the processing power within it, and you can assign them to cores, I was like, oh god, this is an IT guy / guitar player's nerd dream right here. Yeah. Like it is ridiculous, because it is... You
can just allocate where the load is being dispersed on your system.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
It's pretty neat. And I mean, it sounds fantastic. I have no qualms with the sound. I don't really have qualms with the sound of most of the major ones that are out there. Now, what is the Amplify one? That red one. That thing sounds like trash. But other than that, it's bigger in Europe. They sell it on Andertons. I've seen them review it there. Okay. But it's not...
Not the same as the...
It wants to be a budget version of a Helix or a Headrush or a Quad Cortex, but it's not any of those. It's a dummy version of it that has terrible sounding effects. The amps are okay in it, but the effects on it are garbage. But yeah, like I said, for me, when I was looking at them, the thing that it came down to was just user interface. I just loved being able to have a touchscreen and go, oh, I want to put that there and not have to think about it farther than that.
I'll break the touchscreen. I'll break the touchscreen. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I just know. I just know that if I got that, I'd break it 100%.
I'm pretty anal about, like, it doesn't even stay on the floor in the studio. Like, it's up on a shelf in the studio.
I'm not a careful person. So I will break it. It's not even, you know, I just will.
It's not even that I'm going to want to. I won't even try. It's just going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's just, I still like I like the hybrid. I like being semi-emulator, semi-analog.
I just want to have every option available to me, and I'm steadily growing that as I go. Yeah,
semi-digital. It's not really analog.
I prefer the everything in one box.
Well, for live, I 1,000% agree.
Sure.
Like, that is my live rig. That was a lot of why I bought the Headrush. It wasn't necessarily for studio work specifically. It was more for, I want to show up to a gig with a guitar, a backpack with my Headrush in it, and carrying a little bag that has my 8-inch powered speaker in it. Yeah. I'm done.
Yeah. I'm surprised because, like, when you started using that little 8-inch powered speaker, I started telling sound guys just to get you completely out of my monitor. Like, I don't need your guitar in my monitor. I can hear you. Your speaker's like,
I think it's not
5 feet away from me, and it's
1,000 watts.
Perfectly clear. Yeah. Just the clarity of it is just—it's fantastic.
Well, especially now that I have it on the stand.
Yeah.
The one thing that I will say about those FR speakers, which is a bit of a misnomer in some cases, but they can get boomy. If you set them on the floor.
Yeah.
The bass end can get weird when you set them on the floor.
When we rehearse, you'd have to put it on.
I put it on a piece of foam.
Foam.
Yeah. But now I've got a stand that it sits on. That way it's behind me more like an amp would be anyway. And that just works better for me. It gets it off the floor. It's out of the way. I like it.
Yeah.
Which you borrowed it. I mean, what was your take on it with the Helix?
I honestly used it for piano mostly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. but it worked. But when I did use it for it gave me the amp and the room feel that I felt like I was kind of missing. Yeah.
Well, Helix has one too.
Yeah, but it's like,
well, Line 6 has one.
Yeah, it's unbelievably expensive.
Is it?
Oh yeah. The Headrush is like $200.
The Headrush FR, the little 8-inch one, $200.
$200.
The power cab is what, $800 or $900?
Yeah, I mean, it does more than the.
It does.
FR.
I saw a smaller one that was like, it's like a little 10-inch monitoring speaker. It was like maybe like $300-$400.
I'm not sure.
Still twice the price of the Headrush.
Yeah,
they might have one, but I don't think it's worth it price wise.
Yeah,
you know,
Line 6 power cabs. I don't know.
I think it was a power cab.
I know that the Friedman put out an FR. It was an expensive one, and everybody dogged it. Everybody said it was super dark. It was like it was not a flat frequency response.
Right.
Everybody was like, no, I got to change all of my patches. Nothing sounds the same. And I was like, no, I'm not going with the Friedman one then.
No. Defeats the whole point of the.
Well, no, it's the Line 6 Power Cab 112. It like $450.
Yeah. Still over double the price. But yeah. And I went back and forth with getting the 8 or the 12-inch Headrush speaker, and I just ended up going with the 8 because I was like, I don't see where I would need any more than that, considering what it does.
You'll be deafened.
I was like, I barely turn the thing up past 2 most of the time anyway. Like, it's just unnecessary.
There was times in rehearsal before you started putting it on the foam, and like we got our placement right. And I was like, dude, you got to turn down. He's like, I'm on 1. I can't.
I've got nowhere to go, man.
As I'm over here, and like, this one goes to 11. Sorry.
But yeah, no, I
Duke the reference.
I'm a fan. That's a good one. I'm a fan of the FRFR thing. It's worked out well for me live anyway.
Yeah.
And I jam with it in the studio all the time too. Like, if I'm just wanting to live jam my guitar, I'm set up through the Headrush and I'll do that in the studio and just use it. Run backing tracks off the studio monitors or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But works well.
Yeah. I'm pretty much solely in the box lately. Like, everything I do is either DI, I'm monitoring backing tracks through my monitoring speakers. I'm going to have to pull my amp out of the closet and plug it in just so it can get some use. let the vibrations knock some of the dust off of it.
Well, I have to say I have played my tube amps recently just because I got a couple new individual pedals that I was messing around with.
What did you get?
So there's this company that I saw Brett Kingman review called Flamma, and the only place I can find them is on Amazon.
China?
So it's some sort of weird Chinese company or whatnot, but they're fully digital. But I got one that's a delay and reverb in one pedal. And it has like a infinite loop feature so that I can hold on the delay and it will trail everything that it just caught when I press on the switch.
Okay.
But then as I add notes and play over it, it adds them into the trail. So you can build this massive, crazy trail tone. With it. So it's just a really interesting pedal. How useful it'll ever be live, I don't know, but it's fun. But then I found they had a modulation pedal as well that allows you to set 7 presets, and the presets are MIDI switchable.
Okay.
So I may end up going with a switcher setup for my analog board, essentially, so that I can MIDI switch certain pedals.
Can you use does the Headrush do that?
The Headrush could if I ran it in the loop of the Headrush, and depending, here's the funny thing. Okay. I got the thing for Christmas. I haven't even plugged it up because my studio has been torn apart. So if the effects in it are good enough, I may run it in the loop of the Headrush and that way it becomes my modulation instead of the Headrush modulation. But I don't know yet. We'll see. I've got to play with it. I love the delay and reverb one, the modulation one, the review sounded good. I'll have to see. I really got it mainly because I wanted something on my board that I could go, oh, I really wish I had a, oh yeah, I can do that here. You know, like I don't have an individual tremolo on my board or a flanger or whatever. But if I ever needed one for some purpose, I'm like, oh, well, I've got one right here, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a little Swiss Army knife pedal. It may not do everything extraordinarily well, but it'll do everything. Sure. And that's what I wanted it for.
Right. Still makes it versatile.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see. It may be great. I may be like, oh, I'm throwing away all my other modulation pedals. I just need this now. Seriously doubt that.
Ever done that.
Seriously doubt I'll do
They'll
that.
Come over here.
I say all the pedals that I don't use end up on his board.
They do. So
that's where they end up.
And then they sound great.
They do.
You're saying they didn't sound great beforehand? No, I'm just kidding.
That's also probably true.
y'all are having your own conversation.
Chris is pleading the fifth over there. Jerk.
That's great.
But yeah, so I mean, we'll see how those pedals play out. I don't know. But like, I really like the delay and reverb one, but modulations. We'll see when I plug it up, when I actually get a chance.
Very cool. So we have a couple things. As we're getting towards the end, we have a couple things that we're going to be rolling out over the next, maybe like, I'd say probably the next 6 months, 7 months.
Yeah, we got one in the more near-term pipeline.
We'll talk about the other one. I know, right? But we'll, one of the things, which is one thing that me and Taylor have been working on, is we're working on putting together a stock series of backing tracks that will be either just piano and guitar or guitar and bass, piano and bass, whatever, that can be dispersed to drummers, vocalists, other guitarists, any instrumentalists at all, that we'll start offering on for our Patreon subscribers. And we're going to try and get like some more content flowing out there and try and just get more musicians involved in some of the stuff that me and Taylor work on, aside from what I do with Weatherly and the Story Hour concept and stuff like that, which I'm really looking forward to because it's different. It's very different for me. For sure. Yeah.
It's different, period. But
do you
want to
elaborate on why it's different for me?
Because you listen to different music.
Well, obviously, asshole.
Well, I feel like I have a... You studied jazz.
Yeah.
But I don't think you were like jazz.
I studied and played mainstream jazz.
Yeah.
I played like Wynton and Coltrane type shit.
Sure.
That's only one side of jazz.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, I never got into the ad lib or polyrhythmic side of jazz.
Sure.
Like,
what I live for now.
Right, which has been a lot of fun writing too, because it definitely forces me to either think more methodically, or it makes me not think at all and then just feel the music. And so I have fun going back and forth within the same jam session. I go back and forth multiple times between those and a couple other different approaches. And I feel like the combination between me and you working on these, you know, we're keeping them at like, what'd we decide on? Like 2 minutes?
Something like that.
Maybe 2:30, two parts, maybe three at the most.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see what other musicians could do to it. So if you are interested, or there's something specific that you may want something catered to as a backing track for either rehearsals or anything, just definitely drop a comment and we'll probably start rolling that stuff out in June. I think about June.
Yeah.
Weatherly's in the process of writing some new material. I really do like the new songs.
Yes.
They're a lot of fun.
They are fun.
Yeah.
We've been playing around. I've been playing around, playing in different tunings, which is making Chris extraordinarily happy.
For the most part.
Yes.
What tuning? Like?
D, A, D, G, C, D.
Yeah.
Texas tuning.
Okay.
Double drop D, tune your B up to a C. Mr. Like I tune my guitar in fourths.
It's the only way. It's perfect.
Yeah. So it just allows me to voice some chords differently without all the effort that you go through on a daily basis to voice chords differently.
Well, that's true. It is a lot of effort.
My guitar in fourths, it's super easy to voice.
I know, right? Yeah. My wrists hurt because of Weatherly.
Yeah.
One thing that it really did was it allows me to not have to force a darker tone into Weatherly sound. And it's definitely become a more natural, darker tone, subdued tone.
Well, that particular tuning just lends itself to kind of feeling that way.
Yeah.
Which is great.
A lot of warm overtones, nothing really piercing.
Especially if you're
really
playing in D in that tuning, it really...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it makes life real easy and real dark, which is fine. But it's fun.
D harmonic minor. D melodic minor, sorry.
Yeah.
Melodic C going up.
Yeah.
C sharp coming down. Or no, other way around. Sorry. C natural going down. Going up C sharp going down.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, did you say C natural going up? Obviously C sharp going up.
C sharp going up, C natural going down. Yeah.
Theory time with Chris.
It's not theory.
That's not theory. No,
that's
no.
not theory. That's not theory. A full step and a half step on the seventh.
Yeah. Theory is like you look at Coltrane stuff and he's got
that's
like
a either
whole
a black key or a white
thing
piece.
Written out in notes, and you're like, that guy is on something.
I had a score of it was an old Coltrane score that was analyzed by Thaddeus Jones's apprentice. Okay. I don't know what happened to that score, but some of the notes in there were just like his notes and remarks for the chord charts was just fucking insane.
Oh, yeah.
Like you could literally play the entire piece with just the chord chart, with just his notes. You didn't even need the music anymore. Like it was all there.
Yeah.
It's just what he did when he would play that music. It's phenomenal to sit down and watch and look. So, and then a labor of love for me is finally coming to fruition.
It is, and it will come to a lot more fruition once I get my studio back together and can finish some mixes.
We're doing some mixes. So we will put the big announcement out probably in January, start looking for some promo stuff.
Yep.
I will be launching a couple new social media things that there'll be comments to everything for that. But I do want to take a second to just extend my gratitude and appreciation for Brad Cox, Mike Newberry, Dan Houts, Ainsley McCray, Dana Kosh, and Robin Bingham. I said Dan Houts.
No, I didn't hear you. Sorry.
I thought I said it. Of course, you said Dan Houts. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, man.
I blanked out for a second.
Yeah, apparently did. But and Robin Bingham.
They
are my sixth vocalist for the Story Hour compilation that's getting put out, and just the amount of drive and inspiration that they've given me off of this has just fueled a whole new spark of writing for me and approach. Like, I absolutely love the way that this turned out. The mixes that we have of everybody's stuff, I cannot stop listening to them. Like, I literally listen to them at least twice a day.
I only have one thing to say. It's Marshmallow Fields.
Marshmallow Fields.
It makes me real happy every time I hear that. I don't know why.
Doesn't it?
It's my favorite lyric.
Her vocals are genius. Like, they're just the way she incorporated things. So, we'll do a song, a podcast. We'll talk about it a little bit. But I'll definitely do something a little more elaborate once we release the EP.
Oh, certainly.
But for Robin Bingham's song, the way that she wove her vocals in and out of the scenery that I laid down was just, it just matched perfectly.
The way that she wrote her vocals to cater to the title that you gave the song that didn't have lyrics already.
I know.
Is impressive.
Though different stories, it paralleled to similar feelings and similar situations with just another person in general.
Yeah. Well, not only that, she made it the tag. That's really hard to write to an
it arbitrary, really is.
An arbitrary title that somebody gives
not
a piece
put
of
it
music.
In the chorus.
Right.
Not in the chorus. Make it a key feature of text in the body of the music.
That is repeated as a tag multiple times. Like it's. I was impressed lyrically.
Yeah.
And not that I'm super snobbish about it. I can be at times, but I was impressed lyrically.
Sorry.
I was very impressed lyrically.
Yeah.
Like that was one of those times where I was like, I have nothing to add here. That's freaking amazing. Do what you're doing. Like, let's throw some harmonies in it. Let's have some fun. You've already got all this done.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Which turned out to be really, really valuable because we had a lot of fun with the bridge on that song.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun with the bridge on that song.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to get this one out. Just a little bit of the backstory, because we haven't talked much about Story Hour. We've mentioned it a few times.
Yeah.
And mentioned the artist a few times. But the youngest song on Story Hour at the Madhouse is 19 years old. Everything else was written before then. And these are songs that I've never done anything with. I've never had a home. And
were slightly too heavy for Weatherly in most cases.
Yeah, either too heavy or too on the classical side.
Yeah, in a couple of cases, yes.
Yeah. So,
there's only one song on this record that could have been a Weatherly song. And
yeah.
I'm happy that it landed on this record instead.
Yeah.
But just because of the vocalist that is on it and the way that it turned out.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny that you knew exactly what song I was talking about.
When we first started writing The Making Of, in the beginning of Weatherly, that was one of the songs that I pulled up. And that one got displaced by A New Story.
Yep.
Which is very similar in that vein. They were actually both written around the same time.
Yeah, I think we had the conversation. We can't put both these songs in the same record.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we
couldn't.
Shoved to the side, yeah.
And then by the time we started writing for the second record, I mean, we've kind of evolved in where we're going with it, that we don't really want to go backwards. And they would be paralleled with each other a little bit too closely, I think.
Yeah, it would be a very big throwback to the first record if we did that.
And
necessarily a bad thing. But
yeah, but also having it put on Story Hour allowed me to really, really go into the arrangement and the orchestral side of it.
Well, I think the thing that it allowed more than anything was for you to realize your musical vision for it without it being tailored to Weatherly in that case. Because we would have had to tailor it a little bit for it to fit us.
Absolutely.
All the elements that are in this version of it would not be in a Weatherly version of it.
Yeah.
But they fit amazingly in this version of it, which is what your original vision was, which is what I'd rather be for this record. I mean, it needs to be that way.
Yeah. But that Dan song is the oldest. That was that original guitar part came out when I was 15, and by the time I was 17, I had fully built out the song to what it is today, as far as just the one acoustic guitar part and a couple little twiddly bits on top on electric. And now it's
Now we got seven layers of vocals to play with.
Just seven layers of vocals.
Not kidding, by the way.
Seven
layers.
Layers of vocals.
Four layers of strings.
It's going to be the densest song on the record.
I got to utilize my, and Ainsley will appreciate this one, and especially when she hears the track, because like none of the artists will have heard the tracks until after they finish theirs. So nobody has been influenced by any of the other songs off of the album.
Yeah, that's true.
I had this conversation with Brad when we were working.
He had already written his vocals.
He had already written his vocals and hadn't recorded them. And I know Brad Cox well enough to know that once he's done, he's done.
Yeah.
His shit is done. He's not changing it. He's not letting anybody else influence
him. He's got too many other projects to focus on.
He's got too many other projects. And he's also got that mentality that, you know, this is what it's going to be. This was my vision then and there. And that's what I'm going
Put
to
recapitulate. Put the paintbrush down.
Put the paintbrush down. Yeah.
Is that the one you sent me recently?
Yes.
I really like that.
Right?
A lot. Yeah.
It's genius. Yeah. Like, it definitely sparked a couple ideas of some things that we're going to do a little differently in the song structure or the song order of the EP. I will be posting little snippets over the next few weeks of the album art because it is fucking brutal. Focused in Time out of Warrenton, Virginia has been working with me really closely on the album artwork. It's definitely the biggest I've ever gone with a concept. On my own, like, I mean, as much as I can, because I obviously everything's been produced by Kyle. It's a project that I definitely wanted to keep in-house. Kyle has had his hands on every aspect of every song. He just hasn't.
Not writing wise. He has produced.
He has helped cater my tones to make sure that everything stays cohesive. And it's really hard to write six individual songs that all came from separate points of your life that now you're rearranging for specific vocalists, but that are all different vocalists and still have a cohesive album. It's really freaking hard to do. I think we've just about nailed it enough to where when we get to the final mixing and mastering process, we're not going to have nearly as much of a difficult time as we envisioned at first.
No, and a lot of that was because of the prep. Before I went into any mix on any of the songs, I already knew what vocalist was going to be working on.
Right.
And that allowed me to go, okay, well, they kind of sing between A and B frequency-wise. This is about their range. Let me make sure I'm carving space for that stuff. So even when we started getting back scratches or original vocals, whatnot, everything kind of naturally sat because I'd kind of mixed for that originally, at least in the roughs.
Yeah, I mean, I bought a new guitar for the sole purpose of being able to cater to carving out those frequencies, you know, especially with Mike Newberry's song on the EP. That's where the Jackson came into play. Like, I needed that because it gave me it cleared away a little bit more around, like, I'd say like 2000 than my Schecter does.
And I think only one of the songs that I send you back a mix and you kind of went, that is not what I intended, but I like it.
Yeah.
And it was just because I chose a guitar to be primary that you didn't intend to be primary.
No, not at all. I almost deleted the fucking guitar part before I sent it to you. Yeah. I did not want that. I was going to put it in something else.
Yeah. But it ended up becoming the primary guitar.
And it's fantastic.
Well, that's the good thing about just having a second set of ears that is not influenced by your original intent. Mm-hmm. You know, if you and I sat and worked on it together, I'd know your original intent and I'd be influenced by that as I'm making choices.
Right.
I'm not, because you're not giving me any of that information. You're just giving me the track. Here's the vocalist that's going to work on it. And this is my working title for it.
Yeah.
And that's all I get. And then I go from there. And that's been a really fun, interesting challenge. And it's a lot of good prep work for me for working with external clients as well, when I don't necessarily know everything up front. But it also is teaching me a lot about what are the right questions to ask and what are the wrong questions to ask.
Very much so. And that's an interesting point, because that was one of the driving factors of as I started putting this together, like why I would go back and listen to all of the vocalists' works of stuff that they did. You know, I tried to grab a couple pieces here and there from so I could get the full evolution of them as vocalists and what they worked. You know, like with Dan, I went through like two of the Ashes to Embers CDs, and obviously I listen to Think Again stuff on a regular basis
because it's all my Ashes to Embers
CDs. I know, we listen to them regularly. Like that's why they're out there.
Yeah,
they're great albums. They're great songwriting. They're fun performances.
Yep.
And like Brad Cox's stuff, you know, listen to a bunch of We Love the Underground, some of the old stuff that kind of catered to Nikki Thunders, and which I'm living vicariously through Nico. If you have not read The Children of the Program, you need to read those books because fucking amazing. Such a cool, just the whole dystopian concept that he put together with it is just, they're just great.
Yep.
And so it was a lot of fun going back through, listening to them and analyzing them not as vocalists of, you know, what they write about and like what their typical melodies are, but where their evolution was. And I wanted to cater what I wrote to fit what that next stage might be.
Right.
And so far, I mean, the feedback that I've gotten from it is that, you know, that it's forced them to think in a different way. It's forced them to do something uncharacteristic, like Brad's song. Creeped me the fuck out when I listened to it for the first time. Maddox looked at me. We had just got back from his book signing, and like Maddox loves Brad. Like we're close now, and Maddox heard it for the first time, and he was like, "Is that Brad?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Why is he so creepy?"
Like, because the song called for it.
I was like, "Because he is an artist, buddy." Yep. We're all a little creepy.
Yep.
Yeah. But no, that's been a fun challenge, and like you were saying, it's forced me to take another approach, and for the sole standpoint on how I would approach if a client came to us and said, "Hey, this is what we want to do."
Right.
That is where I'm like, I don't know how to do that because I know what I would do. I know what I want to do.
Yeah.
And for me to write a bunch of songs, fully produce a bunch of songs minus the vocals, and then just be like, deuces, I'm out.
Yeah.
Is hard.
It's very
like,
hard.
And
I've even had to tell you a couple times, like, thought you weren't going to be
able
to.
I know.
We've had that conversation once or twice.
You're like, no.
Yeah. It's like, no.
Yeah.
The interesting thing for me was as I was going through mix, doing the roughs anyway, and as we've gotten vocals in from people and doing more close to final mixes, at least until we get everything and we can mix them cohesively, was around when I was mixing it, there was times if it was a Weatherly track, I would have called you and be like, "Hey, I'm just making sure I understand what you're doing with X, Y, and Z."
Yeah.
And then I would take those things into account. There were certain times in this where I would call you, and most of the time it was only on strings, where I would ask certain questions about what your intent with the strings was. But when it came down to the guitars, I didn't ask because I didn't want to know. I wanted to just listen to it, see, and send you back what I thought it sounded best as.
And that's what you're one of the artists on there. Like, yeah. I don't have a say in that. Like, I mean, given we have gone back and forth as far as maybe bringing something up a little bit more, bringing stuff up a little bit down, but
I'd say 90% of anything that was done was me sending you back a mix and going, "Yes, I agree with all that, but I want to replace that guitar because I don't like the tone."
Yeah.
And you would send me back another track of just the same guitar part, but played differently on a different guitar or whatever.
Buy a new guitar.
I think that was half why he wanted to retrack him, is he bought a new guitar. So, you know, and I'd go through and replace those, but they'd still sit in the mix in more or less the same place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there really wasn't a ton of that. We did have a couple conversations on some of the vocals, just around making sure there was enough space for them so they didn't get buried in certain spots and things like that.
That's another hard thing to do is like as when you're – I'm a melodic guitarist. That's what I am. I'm not a solo lead guitarist. I'm not a rhythm guitarist. I'm just a melodic guitarist. So when you're writing an entire album on your own, like that's a lot of fucking melodies. Well, the vocalist is responsible for the melodies, not the guitarist writing string parts and bass lines and piano parts and orchestrations.
That's where it's fun as being a vocalist, I can listen to everything you send me and be like, that's going to be in the way. That's going to be in the way.
Yeah.
That's going to be in the way. And I can just start shifting stuff to where it's not in the way.
Yeah.
You know, the project really catered to everybody's strong suits in this case. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun to work on. The vocalists that we've worked with thus far been amazing and done amazing jobs. And
they're honestly, my favorite six vocalists in local music. Like I listen to all of their music on a regular basis.
Yep.
My seven top vocalists that I've ever encountered non-nationally and fully like with $1 million fucking producers and shit like that. And vocal coaches on tours, like LeJean,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
LeJean still will always be my favorite vocalist, Seven Dust. Like always, but as far as local music and all the states that I've lived, all seven of them have come from Baltimore.
Yeah,
and it's awesome to have all seven of them incorporated on the same album. You're not singing on it, but you fucking sing on enough of my shit.
Exactly. And you never know. I may sneak in a backup vocal somewhere if I feel like something's missing. But
I don't have a say in that, so I don't care.
It won't get credited, and you'll probably never know I did it.
My but shit's done.
But the thing that I like...
So liberating.
the thing that I like that we've been able to accomplish with each of the vocalists is... Because I did a lot of going back and listening to everybody too, the same way you did. And you played me a lot of clips as well of like, this is the thing that I want them to be able to do on this record. This is the thing that I heard.
This aspect right here, when he did or she did that, that's what we need to capture.
Whatever my favorite thing about somebody's vocals are, I got them to... It's in the record. Like with Mike, Mike has amazing range. He has an stellar.
Oh yeah, that octave up in the choruses.
But the octave up in the choruses is sick. It's
missing on the last chorus. Is that deliberate, or we just haven't gotten that far because we're not mixing
until everybody's done? Yeah, I think that's just not there. I think it's just off at the moment.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Sorry, I just noticed that yesterday.
It's okay. But yeah, the octave up in that, the harmonies that we got with Robin, the guttural stuff in Dan's that granted, I didn't get to vocally produce that one. Dan sent all his stuff over. He did it himself, but he did the thing. He did the Dan thing that I wanted to hear in that record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like my favorite thing is when he starts doing the mic pull offs and getting super guttural and whatnot. That's what I love about his vocals.
Too. His range impresses me. He's got a pretty wide range.
His range is deceptive. His
texture changes because which makes it deceptive.
Yeah.
Because you're like, no, he can't go any higher than that. And then that texture changes and he's like three steps above what you just heard. And you're like, well, there it is.
Yeah. No, he's definitely got a way. He has the ability to reach back and go for some higher ones. His range is deceptive. It's just that thing, you know, with Brad, I didn't even know he had that creepy thing in him. Like that was one of those ones where I was just like,
that's why I got the heavier track.
Surprised
to hear Brad do like a metal song, but give him the outlet to be able to do something a little more avant-garde, something a little more artistic and a little more creative than just singing metal music.
You got it. That's for in spades. So, yeah. I mean, that's my favorite thing about this compilation. And I think it's going to be a great record first, number one, but number two, it's our favorite vocalist doing our favorite things on stuff you wrote and I got to mix and produce.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
absolutely. All right. Well, I think we got about it. Happy New Year and Merry Late Christmas and I hope
everybody's holidays, man. There's more holidays than that.
Had some, I don't know.
Kwanzaa.
This time of year gets all screwy for me because it's like it's my son's birthday on the 23rd, then we've got Christmas, then New Year's, and then my birthday right after that, and all of it just starts to run together.
Put it all in one.
Yeah, we've threatened to multiple times.
Your birthday is
coming up again. Yeah, the 7th, 41. Who cares?
Yeah,
nobody cares. it's literally. I looked at my wife. I was like, you can just ignore it. I really don't mind.
Yeah.
Like, don't pay attention to my birthday this year.
I ignore mine pretty much every year, especially when I stop drinking. Because even before then, all I did was. I mean, my birthday was spent playing guitar, drinking Jack Daniels by myself, by choice.
Yeah.
Great birthday.
That sounds pretty fun. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, well, actually, I think that's exactly what I told my wife. I was like, if you let me go have a cigar by the fire pit out back uninterrupted for like an hour. That's my birthday present.
Yeah.
That's all I want. Oh, like, let me parenting. Go sit by the fire pit.
Yeah, you're making, you're not really selling this whole parenting thing really well. Yeah.
No. I love my children, but.
If you don't have kids, don't.
Yeah. During COVID, getting a sanity break and a moment of silence is a gift in and of itself.
Yeah.
When you've got three kids running around the house.
When you have three kids, I just go.
It's hard to even hear yourself think.
You just come here.
I just come here or walk outside.
Yeah.
No responsibilities.
Well, that's pretty great. Yeah. I come here and like immediately my tension melts because I don't have dogs that I need to let out. I don't have a kid that's going to wake up and yell at me that I need something in the middle of me working on things. It's like, I'm just.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like Dana says, my lair. Lair has that calming effect on people.
Yep. My work computer's nowhere near me, which...
Dude, mine is sitting right there, and I swear, people who do artistic things at home and have a space set up for artistic things at home that are now forced to work from home... I love working from home. Don't get me wrong. I'm completely an introvert, so I'm more than welcome being cooped up in a pandemic. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with all the people complaining about being stuck at home. This shit's awesome. I hate the circumstances, but I will say that having my work stuff integrated with my studio layout, it does lead for a little bit of a toxic environment. From an artist standpoint, be careful with that because it can get trapped and then you're kind of carrying over some negativity or residual stress into what you're doing. And it's not as...
It could be a creativity killer.
It's not very healthy.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. It can drive you away from the desk. Like, I don't want to be here right now.
Yeah.
Because I've been at this with that damn other computer. On that
monitor. Like, yeah. I use the same monitors. I just switch the input. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, no, it's the same with me because I run all my email stuff on my regular computer and then just my work. Man. What I need to get in through VPN, I use on my laptop. So, same with me. And yeah, it definitely can burn out at times. And I've been doing it for much longer than the pandemic.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for 8 years, I think. So, it's hard.
The trick is to figure out how to not work, right?
Right.
That's the dream, I think.
There is a time. Like, I mean, honestly, I had to get to a point where I was like, I have to literally
You
shut
started
down.
Setting alarms. Mm-hmm. And your alarm would go off and you would get up and you would go walk for like 15 minutes and then do something else and then...
Yep.
Come back like 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later.
Yep.
Back to it. I remember you doing that like two or three times a day pretty regularly.
Yeah. The other thing, well, it's much easier now with the dogs and the new puppy because they need me to let them out and it forces me to do that. But the other thing I had to do is when I'm working in the studio, I have to shut down my work laptop because it dings and makes noises every time I get an email or somebody tries to IM me or do whatever. And if I'm not in office working hours, all that does is be like, oh, what is that I need to look at? You know, rather than let's just wait till the morning and I'll see whatever happens and I'll figure that out. I almost have this feel this obligation to go see what it is and make sure it's nothing that's on fire and I need to deal with it right then. And it just kills creative flow. So I started shutting it down and literally moving it off my desk and setting it off somewhere else. I'm like, that's not part of my time right now. It's the only way I had to separate it completely because otherwise... But it just kills all my motivation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, Taylor, thanks for hanging out. We're going to jam for a little while.
Yeah.
And have some fun with that.
I'm going to go home, finish breaking down my desk so the carpet guys can get in.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I have left to pull apart.
Yeah.
So, got to tip that over outside.
Back up and running. Rip the legs out.
Yeah, I'm really hoping the carpet guys can get in before Monday, but we'll see. With the holiday, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, right.
But it'll probably, if they don't get in Saturday, it'll be Monday. So we'll see which it is. But yeah, we'll have studio back together. Next week we can have a let's put the studio back together party.
Yeah.
And it'll be fun.
That'll be a lot of fun. And everybody just stay safe, stay healthy, and wash your damn hands.
And try to stay creative. Motivation killers are all over the place right now, but keep your sanity.
Yeah, definitely.
We want to thank our sponsors and friends that make Weatherly Productions possible.
Pig Hog Cables.
Kurt Mangan Strings.
Akon Digital.
Musicland in Bel Air, Maryland.
If you would like to be a supporter of the Weatherly Report, head over to our Patreon page for more details.
Do not forget to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen on.
And check out allthingsweatherly.com for more content.
Keep making music.